ground. He bent his knees and examined Stefan. The single vampire whose scent he'd recognized. The wolf fought to kill their rival, but Adam reined that part of himself in with cold truth. Like him, Stefan had a bond with Mercy. Likely that was what had drawn him here. Maybe Stefan could find Mercy when Adam could not. And Mercy, not jealousy or rivalry, is what is important. At that firm reminder, the raging, violent spirit inside of him settled. The wolf was a hunter. He understood patience. And even the wolf could not doubt that his Mercy was his. Jealousy had no place between them. Terror for her safety, yes, but not jealousy. Stefan's eyes opened, and for a moment they were empty of personality, the eyes of a dead man. Then his face filled with expression, and Adam saw the mirror of his own rage and fear. The vampire exploded to his feet, turning in a circle to take in the wolves who surrounded him. Adam rose more slowly. Stefan wasn't going to hurt him, and it would do no harm under the circumstances to keep his own movements under control. The wolf wasn't fighting him, but the beast was a cunning enemy, and if he had misread the wolf, Adam didn't want Stefan paying the price. Not when he could be the key to finding Mercy.
Mercy?
Stefan asked Adam.
Gone,
Adam said, fighting down despair. It wasn't time for that yet, but if Stefan had to ask the question, then his blood bond with Mercy was doing him no more good than Adam's own mating bond. He gave the vampire the information he had. They hit her car and took her. It looks well planned and professional at this point. They are vampires, and not Marsilia's vampires, he paused. I've never heard of a professional team of kidnappers or assassins who were vampires.
There are some, but they keep a low profile.
Stefan rubbed his face with brisk hands, more as if something about it troubled him than a simple gesture of weariness.
I felt the wreck, he told Adam. I imagine you did too.
He didn't wait for an answer.
I came to this place immediately and found them already working to get her out of the SUV.
Stefan could teleport, a quirk of the magic that allowed a dead man to live. The Maroc son Charles kept a database of vampires and their abilities. He told Adam that teleportation was rare. That both Stefan and Marsilia could do it might indicate that they were made by the same vampire, or vampires of the same lineage. Or not. The vampire continued to speak.
I was focused on Mercy, or else I might have thought to look for more of the enemy. I jumped in to defend her, and someone caught me from behind with a jumped-up taser, I think, given the results.
He rubbed his face again. Can you tell where she is? Adam asked tersely, though he was pretty sure of the answer. If Adam could teleport, and he had a clear signal to where Mercy was, he wouldn't be hanging around talking. He expected that Stefan felt the same. The vampire raised his chin and closed his eyes, a sign of the trust he had that the wolves would not attack while he left himself vulnerable, or that he thought he could defend himself without watching his foe. Maybe some combination of the two. Though he didn't need to, the vampire took a deep breath. When he opened his eyes, he met Adam's gaze with a bleak expression.
No, he said, I can't feel her at all.
Do you know who took her?
Adam asked. Stefan shook his head.
Vampires, but they weren't anyone I've seen before, not local.
What kind of vehicle did they drive? Asked Daryl.
They had a helicopter,
Stefan said. The wolf remembered hearing a helicopter, though Adam hadn't paid much attention at the time. Helicopters had become less notable the past few months because the cherry farmers employed them during and after rainstorms to help dry the cherries before the rain caused the fruit to swell and split. Cherry season was just over, and in a month or two, he'd have noticed a helicopter.
I heard it, said Warren, who had taken his own look around the wreck, but I only caught a glimpse of it while I was running here. They were flying without lights, boss. They were headed south. but they didn't land before the sound of the helicopter was too faint for me to hear. No telling where the helicopter had been going, then. It could be 5 miles away, or 100. The semi was probably stolen, but a helicopter and a team of professionals meant that someone had paid a lot of money to take his mate. A wolf howled from the 20-acre field on the other side of a wall of desiccated arborvitae.
"Sent them out looking for where the chopper was waiting," Darrell said.
Ben ran up, breathless and in his human form. There were maybe 4 or 5 of Adam's pack who hadn't shifted to wolf.
"Looks like it had taken up a..."
Ben glanced behind Adam to Jesse and Aiden, who were huddled quietly where they weren't in the way, but could still hear everything and cleaned up his language.
Freaking home base. There's a low spot behind a rise that would have kept anyone from seeing it. That chopper has been parked there often enough to leave a bare spot. More than a day or two. They've been waiting for a chance at Mercy for a while."
"Might have used magic to keep people away," Darrell suggested.
"A look away would have done it," said Stefan. "Most of us can cast something like that."
"We can follow up on the semi," said Darrell. "And I have a friend who flies out of the Richland Airport. He might know something about a strange helicopter."
It would take hours, if not days, to run down Mercy's kidnappers that way. The wolf was very unhappy with hours, and Adam wasn't cheery about it either. "She went to the store," Adam said abruptly. He hopped back on his SUV and stepped through the broken windshield to pull the receipt off the seat. He saw Mercy's lamb first. The leather seat under the little gold lamb was scorched, as if the charm had been hot when it landed there. Her necklace, broken, was on the floorboard, his dog tag from his time in Nam still on the chain. He found Mercy's wedding ring eventually, hidden under the open carton of broken eggs. He climbed out of the cab with the receipt in one hand and Mercy's necklace components in the other. Warren stood in front of the SUV, one hand on the hood. The old cowboy's eyes were yellow. He saw what Adam's other hand held. If not for his eyes, someone who didn't know him would have thought he was relaxed.
"Stands to reason they wouldn't let her keep that," he said, his voice thick with wolf in Texas. "Mercy's right deadly to vampires with that little lamb of hers. Better than most people with crosses. If you give me the receipt, I'll go see what it tells us."
Adam decided that he himself should not be dealing with fragile humans who might hold some clue to who had taken Mercy just now. He frowned at Warren because he wasn't sure Warren should be doing it either.
"I know the owner of the store," Warren said. "I promise I won't kill nobody. It don't need killing, boss."
Warren only lost his grammar when he was really, really upset. Adam handed the paper scrap over without a word. Warren glanced at the printing and held it to his nose. He nodded at Ben. Together, Ben and Warren jogged to one of the cars, Ben's. Warren slid into the passenger seat, leaving Ben to drive.
"Is it my fault?" asked a small voice.
Adam, still on the hood of the SUV, looked down at the newest member of his family. Aiden appeared as though he should be in elementary school, but he was centuries older than Adam himself. Jesse, who treated Aiden like a little brother, had her hand on his shoulder. One of the cars parked nearby was Jesse's.
"No,"
said Adam's daughter in a firm voice, despite the stark fear in her eyes.
"Even if they came looking for you, it's not your fault. And Mercy will be okay. You remember the ransom of Red Chief we read a few months ago? Anyone who kidnaps Mercy will regret it thoroughly before she's done with them."
She sighed theatrically, acting nonchalant for Aiden, when Adam could feel her distress.
"I suppose the dad is too straightforward to demand payment to take her back, though I bet we could get enough money to pay for my college that way."
She was worried, but he could hear the confidence in her voice. She was still young enough to believe her father could fix anything. Adam didn't tell Jesse what the pack knew. His daughter was human and couldn't smell the blood. He knew that Mercy would tell him that he wasn't accomplishing anything by trying to protect Jesse from the full truth. But Mercy would be wrong because, like Aiden, he needed Jesse's optimism, even if it was a false optimism.
"Mercy will make them pay," he told them, his throat tight. He looked at Aiden. "It wasn't your fault, Aiden.
We claimed this city, these cities, and put them under the Pack's protection because they are our home. You were the catalyst. You and Mercy were the catalyst that pushed us where we should already have been. If that was what inspired. And he'd given that last word teeth, hadn't he? He took a breath and tried again. If that was what inspired someone to take Mercy, it still is not your fault.
I will burn them, Aiden said. And the wolf in Adam loosened its jaws in approval and recognition of another predator, one possibly more dangerous than he.
If there is anything left after Mercy gets done with them, Jesse said coolly, I might help you with that, Sprout.
She looked at Adam.
Is there anything I can do?
He started to shake his head, then stopped. There was no hiding the accident. It was very late, but in a half hour or so, the people who had to head to work in the wee small hours would start driving past. Call Tony and tell him about this. Adam was afraid that he wouldn't be able to keep his temper long enough to stay coherent. But Tony knew Jesse well enough to listen to her. Tell him I'll give him the whole story as I discover it, but that it is supernatural and probably treading into too dangerous for humans to know territory. Tony was a cop, the unofficial liaison between the police and the werewolf pack. There was an official liaison who was pretty competent, but Tony knew more than was safe for a human already. If he hadn't been under pack protection, the vampires or the witches would have killed Tony by now. Adam intended to keep the official liaison safely ignorant of vampires. Tony was trusted enough by his department that they took his word when he told them it was too dangerous to know. But matters had been handled. That was satisfactory to everyone involved.
Can do.
Jesse dug into the small purse that went everywhere with her. A cell phone rang as she did so, but it wasn't hers. Adam glanced in the direction of the noise. Stefan reached into his pocket, pulled out the phone. Without looking at it, he threw it. It landed against the side of the broken SUV, denting the already battered metal. The phone exploded into powder. The wolf thought it was an interesting reaction in a man who appeared so calm. But then he suspected that his own aspect looked cool and controlled because soldiers learn early to hide intense emotion when among enemies, even enemies who are people you like. He and Stefan had both been soldiers. Adam's phone rang and he pulled it out, half surprised it was still in its holder. He glanced at the number and almost refused the call, but stopped himself. Vampires, he thought. They weren't hers, but they had been vampires. Hello, Marsilia, he said in a basso growl that he couldn't stop. There was a pause.
Either you are missing someone or I am, she said. I have contacted everyone who belongs to me except Stefan. You should contact your people, too.
Stefan is here, he ground out. Mercy has been taken.
I see, she said. And if she'd been there, he'd have torn her throat out for the calm in her voice. I just received an email from an ex-lover of mine indicating that he has taken someone from us, from our cooperative.
Cooperative? He asked softly. What cooperative? If it was an ex-lover of Marsilia's, Mercy had probably been taken because of Marsilia, not because of the pack. The guilty boar vanished and left him unbalanced before a rush of anger filled the empty space guilt had left behind. For a moment, the emotional wave was too wild for him to listen to her or anyone else. Wolf stepped in where the human faltered. This isn't her fault, said Stefan's cool voice. This is old business, and she didn't start it, werewolf. Listen to her if you want to save Mercy. Adam realized he must have blanked out again because he was no longer on the hood of the SUV. And other than the vampire, there was a very large space all around him. Adam couldn't find it in himself to care that the werewolf had taken over to the point that he could not remember what he'd done. That he didn't care was a worse sign than losing that much control in the first place. Stefan said,
If your people have to put you down because you choose not to control your beast, then Mercy will have one less person looking for her.
The vampire's words had been uttered in a cold voice, but Stefan's eyes were hot. For some reason, that rage allowed Adam to catch his balance a little. Adam swept his hand toward the cab of the SUV and said what his heart had been screaming since he'd first seen the damage to the cab.
"Mercy is wounded," he ground out, "bleeding out. Vampires aren't going to keep her alive. That's not what they do."
"Dad?" Jesse said in a small voice, and part of him wished he'd guarded his tongue because he'd been trying to protect her from that knowledge. But it was mostly the wolf speaking now, even if it did it in Adam's voice, and the wolf was an honest monster and capable of human subterfuge, even when the lie was to save his own child from pain.
"Mercy is a hostage," said Stefan, speaking slowly as if Adam were hard of hearing, or as if he were speaking to a creature who didn't pay a lot of attention to mere words.
"Like it or not, our two people, werewolves and vampires, are bound together here, in this place, as we must be for our mutual survival.
Others have noticed this. If they wanted to leave a dead body behind, they would have already done it. This means our enemies will target you, and your enemies will target us. Murder would have been a lot easier."
"Vampires are pretty good at keeping humans alive."
The vampire looked a little sick as he spoke that last sentence, so it wasn't as reassuring as he probably meant it to be.
"Why does he listen to Stefan when none of the rest of us could get through?" Adam heard Ariely ask someone quietly.
"Because the vampire smells a little of mercy," Daryl replied. Adam snarled because it was true, then took a deep breath to draw in the scent again. If the vampire still smelled of mercy, Adam decided, it was because Mercy was still alive. Mercy was alive, and he would believe that until presented with absolute proof that she was not. Adam bowed his head, reasserted his, the human's, ownership of his own damned mouth, and looked at Stefan. "What does he want, this ex-lover of your mistress?"
"Not my mistress anymore," said Stefan, but with more sorrow than heat. "I don't know."
He looked around at the pack, now mostly wolves, until his gaze landed near Daryl.
"Any of you have a cell phone I can use?"
And that was when Adam noticed that his phone was crushed in his hand. Some of the glass was sticking into the flesh, which had healed over the top. He busied himself picking it out with his pocket knife while Stefan used Daryl's phone to call Marsilia. The negotiations conducted with Stefan as an intermediary made Adam dangerously impatient. Marsilia thought that inviting Adam to her house was not a good idea. Adam concurred with a grunt. Entering the vampire's seethe meant confusing the immediate issue with outdated manners and games that he was in no mood to play. There was no time. Dawn would arrive soon, and the vampires would retire to slumber, or whatever they did during the day, taking the knowledge of who had Mercy with them. As a compromise, Marsilia proposed Uncle Mike's Tavern, a traditional place for hostile or nearly hostile negotiations, until it closed when the Fae had retreated to their reservations, because they thought that Underhill had reopened to them. When she proved less welcoming than they expected, they had backed down from their initial silence and began arrangements to make peace, or at least not war, with the humans. As part of that trend, Uncle Mike's had reopened a few weeks ago. Adam had no desire to involve the Fae in pack business that was already ass-deep in vampires, and he told them so.
"So where?" asked Stefan impatiently.
"Not my house," Adam said. "I have no intention of inviting Marsilia over my threshold. Once you invite a vampire into your house, it is very difficult to uninvite them. Easier to kill them." Stefan, who had an open invitation to Adam's house, rolled his eyes.
"Could you please, for mercy's sake, come up with somewhere acceptable? I might remind you that Marsilia doesn't share our fondness for your wife. She just doesn't like losing a chess piece, so she is cooperating, and our time is limited."
Marsilia would shoot Mercy as soon as look at her. Adam reined his wolf in and took over.
My backyard, he said. Mercy had littered the backyard with picnic tables and various seating arrangements that were annoying when he mowed, but otherwise aesthetically pleasing and useful. Mercy was alive. Marsilia was offering to help. Marsilia had not hurt or taken Mercy. This was not her fault. It was time to use prudence and not rage. There was no sense in angering his allies. To that end, he took a deep breath and prepared to be diplomatic. While I cannot in good conscience invite Marsilia into the house, I don't believe she means harm to me, to my family, or to the pack. I also intend no harm for her. Ex-lovers, he said heavily, are something I'm familiar with. I cannot blame Marsilia for the actions of hers, no matter how seductive that idea is. I do not believe this is her fault.
I intended no harm to your wife or any who are yours, said Marsilia.
No conversation on cell phones was private around a werewolf pack or a vampire seed.
We will meet in your backyard, and I will tell you what I know. It will take us 20 minutes.
Tony came with another solemn police officer and met the wrecker who pulled the cars off the road and took photos and made a vague report Adam could turn into his car insurance. As if he cared. The important thing was that the vague report would keep the police safe. Tony looked worried at all the blood and glanced at Adam. Then he asked Jesse quietly,
Mercy?
She shook her head.
We don't know. I'll tell you as soon as we do.
Warren and Ben pulled in just as the pack was leaving the scene to the police. Adam slid into the back seat and directed them home.
The store was empty and unlocked when we got there, Ben said grimly. Warren called the owner. He must live pretty close because he was there in just a couple of minutes.
The clerk was new, Warren said, hired last week. The address and ID he used were both fake. Owner wasn't looking closely because he was short-handed. Didn't smell like vampires in there. But vampires don't have any trouble getting humans to do their dirty work.
I'd appreciate it if you keep after the clerk angle, Adam said. Might lead somewhere.
Sure thing, boss, Warren said.
The vampires beat Adam and the pack to his house. When Ben stopped the car and he got out, he could smell them. His wolf wasn't happy with vampires just now, but Adam subdued the monster and walked around the house to the backyard. Marsilia, Wolf, and Stefan awaited him, seated in 3 chairs they'd pulled away from a table. Someone, probably Stefan, had moved 3 more chairs to face them. Marsilia had elected to bring only those 2 out into the open with her, though doubtless she had other vampires scattered about. Adam lifted his head and scented the air. Or maybe not. He waved a hand and sent those pack members who'd come to the backyard with him into the house. Everyone obeyed except for Daryl. Adam raised an eyebrow at the big black man who was his second. Someday in the not-too-distant future, Daryl was going to move on. He was ready for his own pack and was beginning to chafe under orders. Adam wondered how they would manage to find a pack for Daryl when his pack had no more ties to the Maroc, who ruled the wolves. Traditional methods tended to leave bodies behind. It was a momentary thought, though, brought about because of Daryl's disobedience. Adam's wolf wasn't worried. The future was what the future was, and for now, Daryl was still his. Daryl was smart. He would have a reason.
We can agree on Stefan as neutral, Daryl said when he was within conversational distance. We think that you should meet as equals, though. So you need a second with you.
He was right. Good to have a second who could think things through when all Adam really wanted to do was hunt down the vampires who had taken Mercy and obliterate them. Killing was too clean. Impatiently, Adam nodded his agreement and took the seat opposite Marsilia. Daryl sat at his right, and the chair at his left stayed empty. Marsilia was a real bombshell. Blonde-haired Italians were never common, and he knew that the color was natural because Stefan had commented upon it. But her beauty wasn't a thing of color only. It was bone and muscle deep. Beautiful people, mostly, lived like everyone else. Extraordinarily beautiful people, however,
usually paid dearly for their beauty. Adam was pretty sure that had been no less true in 15th century Italy than it was now. Intelligent brown eyes examined him, maybe for weapons, maybe for weaknesses. He didn't mind because he was doing the same. Though for both of them, what they were made them pretty efficient weapons all by themselves. She was wearing slacks and some sort of silk top that left her arms and shoulders bare, covering her adequately, otherwise, while leaving no doubt that she wore no bra. She could have appeared on a news program or a Hollywood premiere in her outfit without attracting comment. She wore it like a woman who habitually used her body as a weapon, rather than someone aiming a weapon at him personally. To her left sat Wolf, who'd succeeded Stefan as her second-in-command when Stefan had left her seat. Wolf looked like a sulky punk rocker from the 80s, though maybe that look was back. Without Jesse's prodding, Adam tended to lose track. Wolf's pale hair stuck out in chick-soft-looking tufts about an inch long, whose ends were dyed pink. Wolf was, in Adam's estimation, more dangerous than Marsilia, if only because he was unpredictable. Stefan, interestingly, sat on her right. Wolves pay attention to body language, and Stefan's body language was protective and worried.
First, she said, I have to apologize for the way in which my past has rained down upon you. It is no secret that Mercedes and I are not friends, but I value the role that she plays in our community, and I do not think that anyone else could balance the werewolves, the fae, and the vampires as well as she does.
Differently, murmured Wolf. More interestingly even, but not as peacefully.
Are you finished? Marsilia inquired politely.
Excuse me, mistress, Wolf said diffidently. I was just enlarging upon what you said.
Who took her? Asked Adam. He wasn't interested in apologies that she didn't mean.
He did not sign his email, Marsilia said, but I recognized the wording. It was Jacopo Buonorata, the Lord of Night. He who rules the European vampires.
As soon as she had told him it was her ex-lover, Buonorata had been Adam's pick. First, Adam didn't know of any other ex-lovers of hers. He suspected that if she had other ex-lovers, they either served her or they were dead. Marsilia was as pragmatic a creature as any he'd ever met.
Why? Adam asked. What does he want?
How do we get my Mercy back alive?
He didn't say it because they all knew what he was asking.
His email did not say, Marsilia told him. Knowing him, it could be any of a dozen reasons. He could be reacting to our killing of Frost, which he might see as an elevation of my power.
He sent me here to rot, not to rise up through the ranks and rule North America.
He knows you well enough. He should have thought of that as a possibility. Stefan told Marsilia.
Not his business what anyone does here, said Adam. He rules Europe.
Wolf laughed.
Innocent, he told Adam. I find it so droll that you are such an innocent.
Then the silly affectations left his body, and he was softly menacing as he said,
Jacopo Buonorata has spider silk throughout the world. He owns corporations based in New York and Texas, as well as Buenos Aires and Hong Kong. He has owned 4 of the last 6 presidents, though they did not know it. Any other vampire rising to power is a threat, and he does not deal well with threats.
He is a Renaissance prince, said Marsilia, almost apologetically. The last of his house, the rest of whom died during the Black Death, control everything or die. It is how he was raised, how he thinks. I do not know that he understands words like content or enough.
He threw away something of great value, said Stefan. Something he viewed as a work of art, and he knows it.
He regrets it.
Marsilia turned her great dark eyes on Stefan.
Don't be ridiculous.
He told me the night we left for the New World that if I became your lover, he would hunt me to the ends of the earth, Stefan said.
If Jacopo were a dog in a manger, Wolf said, he would urinate and defecate in the hay.
and before he would allow anyone to spread the hay on the ground to at least get use of it as fertilizer, Jacopo would light the hay on fire. And then he would sing about how wonderful the hay was and how tragic its loss.
You carry that analogy a little too far, said Marsilia.
It is accurate, Wolf defended himself. The song was in a minor key, and the painting he did, I am told, was nearly as stunning as you actually are.
So why did he take Mercy? Adam asked Marsilia. If someone didn't distract Wolf, he was likely to lead the conversation all around the mulberry bush until there was no time left.
Because I told him that she was the most powerful person in the supernatural community of the Tri-Cities, said Wolf.
I think.
Adam's wolf lunged forward without warning, and he would have killed the vampire if Daryl and Stefan hadn't pulled him back. No one had grabbed for Marsilia.
Oh, don't hold him back,
Marsilia hissed. She had, Adam noted, lost her usual composure. She was out of her chair and had Wolf's throat in one hand.
Much easier to explain why the werewolf killed him than if I did it.
Wolf dangled from her hand, though he was taller than she was. He managed it by bending his knees. He had a wide, sappy grin on his face until Marsilia looked at him. Then his grin fell away, and he watched her soberly, apparently not discomforted by his position at all.
"Why did you talk to Jacopo without telling me?" she asked.
"I talk to him all the time," Wolf replied, his voice strained. "You know that. That's why he let me go with you." Adam saw from her face that Wolf was right. He took a step backward and shook Daryl off. Stefan let go more slowly. Marsilia would get more out of Wolf than he could, and she might be able to restrain herself from killing him in the process. Adam wasn't sure he could manage it.
"What did he want when he asked you who the strongest of us was?" she asked.
"I don't know," Wolf said.
"Not exactly. I answer his questions. He doesn't answer mine."
"You made him," she said.
Wolf snorted.
"I haven't been his master for a very, very long time. Any more than he is yours."
"Why did you put Mercy forth as the most powerful of us?" asked Adam tersely. Wolf's silly grin returned.
"Because it was funny."
He sobered.
"Because it was true."
He looked at Marsilia.
"Because if I'd answered the question the way he meant it, he'd have taken Adam, and he would have killed Adam. He couldn't have helped himself."
"Mercy? He won't see the threat Mercy is until she has his head on a pike. He doesn't understand that kind of strength. He cannot use his most powerful weapons on her because of what she is, and he has no experience to understand what she is."
Marsilia looked at Adam. "Are you satisfied? Is there anything else you'd like to know?"
It could, Adam knew, all be a play for his benefit, but he didn't read it that way. Wolf was as twisty as a carousel pole, but Marsilia was scared. She was also brave and smart, so she was facing the situation head on. But she was scared of Jacopo Buonarroti.
"You didn't warn any of us," Adam said softly, addressing Wolf.
"Where would the fun be in that?"
Wolf answered. But then he said soberly,
"You don't know Jacopo the way I know Jacopo. If I had warned you..."
"The Lord of Night," said Stefan reluctantly, "is the reason Wolf is the way he is, Adam. He wasn't always..."
"Crazy?" suggested Daryl.
"No," said Marsilia with a sigh, letting go of Wolf. He settled semi-gracefully onto the grass at her feet. "He was always strange, but he didn't used to enjoy pulling wings off butterflies."
"He wasn't sadistic," clarified Stefan. "Buonarroti inspires loyalty by using various methods, and some of them are damaging." Marsilia opened her mouth, glanced down at Wolf, then closed it again.
"Especially to those of us who loved him," said Stefan insistently.
Daryl looked at Adam for permission and got it. He said, "Not that we don't appreciate learning more about our enemy, but what we need to know is how are we to get Mercy back?
Where did he take her? Why he took her matters only in that it will allow us to use that knowledge to get her back.
As Daryl took the lead, Adam fought his wolf to a brutal standstill. He had to think. He had to think in order to see and plan the best way to help Mercy, to get her back. And in order to do that, his wolf spirit was going to have to... He had been trying to restrain the wolf, and it had put them at odds.
I don't know where he took her, Marsilia answered Daryl. He has homes in New York, Florida, and Arizona, as well as South America. I don't know why he took her, other than to catch our attention.
We have to hunt, Adam whispered to the wild spirit who shared his body. The wild spirit he both despised and gloried in.
We have to hunt, find Mercy, and destroy the one who took her from us, and teach them that Mercy is ours.
Inside him, the wolf paused, considering Adam's argument. After a moment, the beast agreed. Freed of that battle, though he remained wary, aware that the wolf was only biding his time, Adam turned to the more important situation. First, to make certain his allies would shoot his enemies before they would shoot him.
Compared to Buonarrota, said Adam slowly, Mercy matters not at all to you, Marsilia.
So why did you approach us?
She raised her chin.
I did not know it was one of yours he took at first. But even so, let us be honest, yes? Had he taken one of mine, I still would have come to you for help. I am myself a power in the vampire hierarchy. But when I was exiled, I quit trying. I existed, but for all intents and purposes, I did not direct my seed, other than to see to it that my people were safe and behave themselves in such a manner as not to attract human attention. The result of my inattention is that outside of me and Wolf, my seed holds no individually powerful vampire.
Wolf? She glanced down at the vampire, who, still sitting on the grass, had leaned his head against her knee.
I cannot, in all fairness, ask Wolf to face Buonarrota in person again.
She is kind, murmured Wolf.
He smiled a hard, cruel smile directed at her.
But the reality is that she doesn't know whom I serve, her or my scion who recreated me as he pleased for his own purposes before he sent me with her.
To bring me under such a circumstance would be stupid.
Even so, she said evenly, my seed is stronger than it has been in years. We have had some new-made vampires and some who have come here drawn by your declaration.
It is not only the Fae who are tired of fighting,
but there are only three master vampires, those of us who do not need to obey our maker or the mistress of the seed.
I am the first, Stefan is the second, and the wolf is third.
I know Jacopo.
Jacob, murmured Wolf. He goes mostly by Jacob now.
Jacob, she said. I don't know why he took Mercy or where he took her. But he will send us another email or have a minion call and issue an invitation to come fetch our missing one. My strength is all in numbers right now, and he will not allow me to use that. I will need you and your wolves.
To get Mercy back, Adam said.
To keep Buonarrota from coming here, she said, and taking over my people and yours. Do not doubt that he could. He stole the mate of an old and dominant werewolf and made her his mindless slave. When her mate tried to save her, he destroyed the whole pack except for the Alpha. I have heard that Jacopo keeps that one alive still.
Jacob, said Wolf. You keep forgetting. And the old Alpha is dead.
Jacob lost his witch and doesn't know where to find her. Without her, he couldn't keep the old wolf around, so he killed him. It, actually. I think the wolf was an it when it died.
Adam ignored Wolf.
Instead, he looked at Stefan. You think Buonarrota will call us to come to him?
Mercy's vampire nodded.
It fits Buonarrota's pattern.
He will call us to come and make nice. He'll explain this all as a misunderstanding,
And if he is satisfied with what we are, neither too strong to challenge him nor so weak that we are easy prey, he is likely to return Mercy with no more than a demand for some concessions that will be within our power.
Stefan shrugged.
Marsilia smiled wearily.
It is his weakness, you see,
she told Adam.
He loves adulation, to be admired. He is man enough to understand that if that sentiment is only the result of his magic, it means less.
Assuming that you are right in your assumptions about why he took Mercy, Adam growled.
Assuming that,
she agreed,
and assuming anything about Jacopo Buonarroti is dangerous. Even so, if we go meet his strength with strength, be charming and be charmed, it will not be difficult to be charmed. It is strongly possible that we will return with Mercy and a reasonable assurance that the Lord of Night will stay safely on the other side of the ocean and leave us be until we attract his attention again.
Go where? Asked Daryl.
Wherever he took Mercy, I imagine, she said. I'll let you know when he contacts me.
3. Mercy. And here I am, standing naked before the unlocked freezer door. To give myself another chance to think, I folded the nasty rags that a day ago had been comfortable schlepping around in the house and playing pirate clothes. Now they could have been costuming for a zombie movie, or I suppose a particularly bloody pirate adventure. I tucked my underwear inside the shirt. I took another look at my ribs, but there wasn't so much as a scar left behind. That was some healer Buonarroti had. He'd used her on me when he thought I was powerful, that he might turn me into an ally. I wouldn't let his earlier care delude me into believing that he didn't now think that it would be more convenient to have me dead. I was achy and sore, but nothing too bad. My wrist, where the cuff, the witch's bracelet, had poked little holes in my skin, was itchy, but the dots were smaller than they had been. When I touched my toes, when I jogged in place, nothing hurt enough to interfere with my movement. Even the shaky, light-headed feeling had mostly subsided. Maybe it had been the lingering effects from being unconscious for so long, or maybe it was a side effect of the cuff's magic. I was good to go. Part of me wanted to wait. I knew what I faced, more or less. In many ways, my whole childhood and adolescence had consisted of pitting my wits and 35-pound coyote self against werewolves, some of which weighed north of 300 pounds. All that experience told me that my chances were pretty much even against Buonarroti's werewolf. Even odds weren't really very good odds against death by werewolf. But most of one summer, the Maroc's terrifying son Charles had taken me on as a student, though I hadn't realized that was what he'd done until many years later. At the time, I thought it was a punishment for wrapping the Maroc's new car around a tree. Right now, Charles's voice rang in my ears, as if it had curled up into some corner of my mind until I needed it.
"If you are taken by your enemies," he said, "don't wait to escape. The hour you are taken is when you will be at your strongest. Time gives them the opportunity to starve you, to torture you, to break you and make you weak. You have to escape as soon as you can."
Pretty intense stuff to say to a teenager you were teaching to do oil changes and rotate tires. But Charles was like that. It was part of what made him so scary. Standing in front of the metallic door, I wondered if he'd had some prescience, some vision of me in my present circumstance, or if he'd just been passing on advice, because everyone should know what to do if they were kidnapped. With Charles, it was hard to tell. His advice was good. Now was the time to attempt to escape. Even, I added to myself as I touched the invitingly unsecure door, if they expect you to try it. Even if they have set it up so they could kill you without accepting blame. Another thing that Charles would say was that standing around staring at the door wasn't accomplishing anything useful except giving me time to scare myself. Unencumbered by clothes, I opened the heavy freezer door and emerged into a moonlit garden. A light breeze, just this side of Chile, caressed my bare skin and brought a host of unfamiliar scents. I stepped over the doorway, And truthfully, despite the play Bonarata had made that there was something important about that space, I didn't expect to feel anything. But my ears popped as if I'd just dropped 1,000 feet, and magic shivered across my skin, scratching like spider legs. I froze for a heartbeat, but when that was all that happened, I took a cautious step forward. There was packed gravel under my feet and a roof over my head held up by huge old timbers. At first I thought it was some sort of porch around the building I'd just left, but the covered part was bigger than the building. It was more carport-sized, with two adjacent sides open. The building was the long closed side, and the end of the building met a yellow stuccoed wall. The freezer end of the building tucked into the corner next to the wall and took up about a third of the building. The other two-thirds looked like long-abandoned horse stalls. The building, roofed area, and wall were all set in a large walled garden that held rows of grapes and fruit trees. Ivy climbed the 10-foot walls. On the opposite corner of the garden was a huge house in the shape of an L that appeared as hoary as the building at my back. The whole place looked as though someone had tried very hard, with better-than-average luck, to recreate the set of a movie that had taken place in Italy. I assumed it was to make Buonarroti feel at home in a strange land. I couldn't get any sense of what lay outside the walls. There were no towering mountains, but it didn't feel like the Tri-Cities either. The air smelled different. It was cooler, and the air was damp. Maybe I was in Yakima or Walla Walla. I hadn't spent a lot of time in Yakima, but Walla Walla's air wasn't as dry as the Tri-Cities, and it was cooler. I took another step away from the doorway, and I quit worrying about where I was when I felt something, someone. Heart pounding with hope, I looked back at the open doorway. I let my eyes become unfocused. Then I could see it. A ring of magic that stretched along the edge of the building and disappeared around the open edge, and, on the side with the wall, slipped under the stones like an electric cable made of magic or a circle of magic. Buonarroti hadn't lied. I was a better prisoner inside that circle than I was outside it. Because outside it, the bonds that tied me to Adam and to the pack were functioning again. Sort of, anyway. I reached out with my soul, down the familiar path that had so recently been blocked by silence. I reached for Adam. It didn't quite work. Not the way it should have. I could feel him at the edge of my awareness, but that was it. Maybe the wreck had done something, or the drugs or magic that had kept me quiet until they got me here. Maybe it was some kind of witchcraft or magic I wasn't resistant to right now, or that the circle was still affecting me. Maybe there was another circle around the whole property. But I could tell that Adam was alive. Hopefully he could do the same. I'd examine the bonds more carefully later. Right now, I had to work on survival, because I could smell the distinctly musky mint of the werewolf's scent. "You might as well come out," I said to Lenka the werewolf. That way I'd know where she was, and I could head for the garden wall in a direction that gave me a head start. "I know you're there." She'd meant for me to scent her. She wanted me afraid. A low growl filled the air, soft enough not to be heard in the house. I think it was supposed to be scary, too, which it was, but not because I was afraid of the sound of her voice. I remembered her crazy eyes and was scared. Fear was good. Fear would make my feet faster. "I live with werewolves," I reminded her. "Hiding doesn't make you more frightening." The wolf who rounded the corner of the walled side of the roofed area was too thin, and her fur coat was patchy. But her movement was easy, and the fangs she showed me as she snarled were plenty long. I'd grown up hearing the old wolves talk about how much more satisfying it was to eat something while its heart pumped frantically from terror. Some of the old wolves who came to live out their last years in the Morrocks pack were not kind. "Hi there," I told her casually. And then I bolted for the wall surrounding the yard. I smell mostly human to a werewolf's nose, especially if I haven't recently been running around on coyote feet. Human is a smell with enough variability that unless they know what I am, werewolves mostly chalk up the bit of odd in my smell to that. Vampires, I don't know as well. I was betting that the vampires here didn't know what I was, that they thought I was human. I'd very carefully left it out of the mini-biography I'd given Buonarrota, and it wasn't widely known. My best-case scenario was that she would think I was a human woman trying to run for her life, penned inside the yard because, outside of a few martial artists and acrobats, the walls were enough to keep most people in. I don't get super strength or scary points, but speed is my friend, and I caught her flat-footed because she thought one thing was happening when it was really something else. She thought I was running from her, and I was just trying to get up some speed. I ran for the wall. I don't know what she thought I was doing, but she chased me hard for most of the distance. But as I approached the giant stone wall that surrounded the grounds, she slowed, anticipating that I would be stopped by it. A few months ago, a bunch of the pack had been at Warren's house watching a Jackie Chan movie. I don't remember which one because we were having a marathon, and Jackie just ran up a wall like magic. Warren had a wall around his backyard. Someone stopped the movie, and we'd all gone out and tried it. A lot. The werewolves had gotten moderately proficient, but my light weight and speed had made me the grand champion. The trick is to find a corner and have enough speed to make it to the top. Instead of stopping at the wall, I Jackie Chan'd it up the stone surfaces and leaped over. I caught the werewolf totally by surprise. I don't expect Buonarrota and Lenka watched old martial arts movies together. It didn't seem like that kind of relationship. Her pause meant that the wolf, who could have caught me, because as agile as I'd learned to be imitating Jackie Chan, going up was still slower than going forward, had missed her chance. I didn't intend to give her another. I changed to coyote as I came off the top of the wall. I am not a were-anything. It takes them time to change from human to wolf. I could do it, well, in this case, I could do it in the time it took me to drop off the wall. I landed on 4 feet, running as fast as I could down a narrow road that was walled on both sides. I had no idea where I was, but out was a good direction, and I didn't hesitate as I headed one way. Nor did I slow or look behind me. I didn't need to. My ears told me when she landed on the outside of the wall. I could hear her running behind me, her claws giving her better purchase on the ground than mine did. Werewolves had huge freaking claws, and she was using them to give herself traction, like the big cats do. Experience had taught me that I was faster than most werewolves. Most, but not all. It was my bad luck that she wasn't one of the slower ones. She was closing in on me by inches. I watched for a cross street, a change of some sort that would allow me to use my small size to my advantage. But there were only stone walls and stucco walls and cement walls and tall, solid gates. So I ran as fast as I could and hoped that I had more endurance, that her sprint would slow faster than mine. I don't know how long we ran through the night streets. On a moon hunt, the pack would run for 4 or 5 hours at a time for the sheer joy of it. So, outside of a few lingering aches from the wreck, I was in good shape. Better than she was, half-starved as she appeared. Certainly in better shape than I would have been after being Buonarrota's guest for weeks. I'd have to thank Charles if I made it out of this alive. Eventually, condition counted. I started to pull away from her very, very slowly. About that time, the walls on either side of the road fell away, and I found myself running along a country lane with vineyards rising on gentle hills on both sides. There were still fences, but that was okay. I could deal with fences. Vineyards were a godsend. There are vineyards all over the Tri-Cities. I know about vineyards and werewolves and coyotes. I slipped through the bars of an ornate steel gate and ran along the length of the first row of grapes. I think she knew what I was planning. Maybe she'd hunted smaller prey in this very vineyard before, because she sped up and closed the distance I'd opened between us. But once again, she was too late. I would have hated to face her if she'd been in top condition, if she hadn't been half crazy. But if she hadn't been Buonarrota's pet, mistress something, she wouldn't be trying to kill me. Grapes are grown in rows. The path between rows is kept clear, and it is easy to run through the vineyard from that direction. But the grapevines are trained to spread tidily on a wire or rope fence, so running through the vines themselves is difficult, unless you are a coyote. The fence the vines are grown along leaves plenty of space for a coyote to slip through between strands. I turned into the vineyard. After the second row, I got a feeling for the spacing and didn't have to slow or shorten my stride as I ran through the gracefully draped vines. The werewolf was a lot bigger than I was. She had to jump every row. It wasn't the additional effort that won the race for me. It was just that every time she jumped, was that much time she wasn't propelling herself forward. It slowed her down, and it required more energy. She was moving roughly 10 times as much mass as I was, which hopefully would tire her out faster, though that didn't seem to be happening with any appreciable speed, even given her poor condition. I kept waiting for her to break down the row and run on the road beside the vineyard instead, where her speed would be less hampered than mine was. But she just kept following me, as if she was incapable of more tactical thinking. By the time I reached a road again, ducking beneath the tall hedge and fence that the werewolf would have to vault over, I'd gained nearly 40 yards. This road traveled straight uphill for about a half mile, then, from the sign on the verge, intersected with another road. The last steep bit I managed by ignoring my tiredness and occupying myself with the very important decision of whether to continue straight or turn left or right. My life hung in the balance, but I had nothing to draw upon to make the decision an informed one. The high hedge lined both sides of the road I was traveling on, and I could not even see the new road. I hesitated a moment, 1 second and two, right at the intersection. I glanced over my shoulder and saw the satisfaction in her eyes. My indecision had given her the hunt. She was still stronger than I was, and the long uphill stretch had eaten most of the lead that the vineyard had given me. She was so busy seeing me as her prize, she didn't pay attention to anything else. So when I bolted across the intersection, she did too, and the bus that I'd waited for hit her and rolled over the top of her with both sets of wheels. I turned right, the direction the bus had come from, and kept going. Behind me, I heard the bus slow and stop. I hoped that she was dead, or dead enough to leave the bus driver and the people riding in it safe. After a while, I heard the engine sound change as the bus pulled out again and headed away on its original course. I dropped from a sprint to a jog. She might still be alive, but she wasn't going to be chasing me again until she'd had time to heal. Without a pack, it was going to take her a few hours at least. It was still dark, though, and there was the possibility that the vampire hadn't left his, what, lover, food, to kill me on her own. I needed to find a safe place. I needed to contact Adam. I needed to eat something, not necessarily in that order. Water, the most immediate need, I found in a trough set out for some cows. They watched me curiously, but I didn't alarm them. I thought about cutting through their pasture and into more vineyards, but I wanted to go home. Following the road until I found a familiar setting seemed to be a better choice. The road I followed was, other than the small cow pasture, bordered on either side by vineyards until civilization crept very slowly back in, but not in any useful fashion. I traveled for another hour or four, until the first rays of the next day dawned, without finding any place that seemed safe. I think if I hadn't been so tired, I might have done something smart, like changing into a human and going looking for help. Though maybe not. Buonarrota would not be kind to any human who thwarted his will and helped me. That was his reputation, anyway. Instead of looking for help, I found railroad tracks and followed them for a while, exhaustion leaving me very focused on putting more miles between me and the vampires, on getting away safely. A train seemed like a very good idea. In the end, I didn't take a train. I found the station right on the edge of where village turned into tight-packed city. As I was trying to figure out just how to jump on a train without anyone seeing me, pack magic could make people not pay attention to me only as long as I didn't do anything too interesting, I realized that there was an easier ride to be had. The small train station